Before I had time to say a word to the sensitive, or to draw his attention to what I had seen of the building, Mr. T. and Mr. W. hurried down the steps leading to it and ushered us into a splendid entrance hall, up a palatial staircase, and into a very large and lofty room, beautifully decorated and furnished in sumptuous style with massive writing desks, large chairs and settees upholstered in scarlet leather, whilst on the floor was a carpet into which our boots sank luxuriously. Two ladies were waiting for us near the handsomely carved fireplace, and we were then informed that no other persons had been invited, so closing and locking the doors, we took our seats round the sensitive in one corner of the palatial room and awaited results. Now, in this instance again, little or no special preparation had been made for the experiment, and, in spite of the splendor of the place and its contents, I told them that I doubted if we should get anything whatever in the way of results under such adverse conditions. The sensitive quickly passed into a state of trance, and, in less than 15 minutes of our taking our seats, the figure of a tall and elderly man appeared, who stooped slightly as he walked. He moved towards Mr. T. and Mr. W., who recognized him instantly. The ladies too both recognized him, but as no name was mentioned by them, I concluded that the entity was probably a relative or personal friend of theirs. After standing before them for nearly 2 minutes, he suddenly turned and walked up to within 18 inches of the spot where I was seated. I knew him at a glance, and said, "Why, it is Lord Underscore whom I so often saw in 1881. He at once bowed his head and smiled at me in quite a friendly way, but although his lips moved distinctly, I did not hear what he said. Mr. T. was the first to speak aloud. He said, "This is more than wonderful. The place in which we are sitting is the underscore underscore London, and this is Lord underscore S's own room. We decided to sit here as a test, without telling you or the sensitive the place we had selected, in order that we might see whether it was possible for Lord underscore to return to the room which he so dearly loved, the one in which so many of his greatest diplomatic triumphs were carried to a successful issue." They then told me for the first time that they were both in the service. Two or three other entities appeared, and a small wild animal from India, to which I shall refer shortly, also materialized, in spite of my imploring the entities not to let him do so, or at least to keep him in check in such a palatial apartment. But this the entities declared themselves incapable of doing. One in the little animals campered into the room, climbed onto the gorgeous writing desk nearest to us, and rushed across it, scattering official papers, pens, and pencils in wild confusion. How we all escaped the headsman's block on Tower Hill, or imprisonment for life, for our escapade in a government building, and in one of the most sacred rooms in that building, remains an unsolved mystery to me to this day. 1. See Animals, Experiment No. 8, Place, Wilton Crescent, London, S. W. Sensitive D. Mel, aged about 34. Whilst this Mel, sensitive was seated in a corner of the room, and wedged in there tightly by the ring of sitters grouped round him, sitter number 1 being not more than 3 feet from him, a female entity appeared, who at once walked out amongst the sitters and stood talking to them for more than 5 minutes. When at a distance of about 8 feet from the sensitive, one of the legs of the wooden chair on which he was seated suddenly gave way, and he fell forward into my arms, as I happened to be the sitter number 1 and nearest to him. He was in deep trance, breathing heavily and groaning slightly. Contrary to our expectations, the entity was not nearly so startled as were the sitters, her first thought being for him. She stood perfectly still at the spot where she had been at the moment of the accident, and directly we had propped up the chair temporarily, and had placed the unconscious sensitive upon the seat once more, she walked slowly towards him and then dematerialized, as she often used to do, passing to all appearances through the floor. This was always an interesting portion of the experiment to watch. The feet and ankles would first disappear, then slowly the legs, up to the hips, would sink downwards, next the body up to the neck, followed, after a few words of farewell, by the face, the top of the head remaining for about 30 seconds on the surface of the floor, the dazzling white of the drapery, in which the heads had been draped during the appearance of the entity in our midst, showing plainly above the dark-colored carpet. The dematerialization lasted for about a minute and a quarter from first to last, and was clearly visible, by artificial light, to all present on every occasion. Experiment Number 9, Place, Eaton Square, London, S. W. Sensitive D. Male, aged about 34. Materializations of both beasts and birds sometimes appeared during our experiments with this sensitive, the largest and the most startling being that of a seal, which appeared on one occasion when Field Marshal Lord Wolseley was present. The first time that this occurred was in a private house in Eaton Square, which the sensitive had never entered before, the owner of the house being a complete stranger to him at the time. During the experimental meeting, we suddenly heard a remarkable voice calling out some absurd remarks in loud tones, finishing off with a shrill whistle. "Why, that must be our old parrot," said the lady of the house. "He lived in this room for many years, and would constantly repeat those very words." This was at once confirmed by her daughter, and also by the lady's governess, who were present as sitters. As this was the first occasion on which I had ever even heard of such a thing as the materialization of a beast or bird, I was completely nonplussed for the moment, I confess, but one of the entities explained the matter to us, one, and after that evening we occasionally witnessed materializations of some of the badly named lower orders of creation. 1. See Animals – Chapter 4, both scientific and lay critics, who up to this stage of our investigation had merely termed us hallucinated cranks, just as they had termed Sir William Crookes, now stated boldly that we were either descendants of Anonias and Sapphira or else as mad as March hares. But the results of the next experiment which I will record disposed of these criticisms finally, for I was able to prove the truth of my assertions by ocular demonstration to many of our would-be critics. A small wild animal from India, the at one time pet of a lady present on the occasion to which I shall now refer, an animal which had been dead for 3 years or more, and had never been seen or heard of by the sensitive, and was known to only one other sitter, suddenly ran out from the spot where the sensitive was sitting, breathing heavily and in a state of deep trance, the little creature uttering exactly the same cry which it had always used as a sign of pleasure during its earth life. The entities told us not to be alarmed at its appearance, as it would take on its old conditions, and would be quite harmless. It had shown itself altogether on about 10 different occasions, staying in the room for not more than 2 minutes at a time, and then disappearing just as suddenly as it had arrived upon the scene. But on this occasion, the lady who had owned it during its life called it to her by its pet name, and it then proceeded to climb slowly up onto her lap. Resting there quietly for about half a minute, it then attempted to return, but in doing so caught one of its legs in the lace with which the lady's skirt was covered. It struggled violently, and at last got itself free, but not until it had torn the lace for nearly 3 inches, as was afterwards discovered. At the conclusion of the experiment, a medical man, Dr. A. C., who was present, asked everyone to remain in their seats whilst he made a careful inspection of the torn lace. He reported that there were 5 green-colored hairs hanging in the torn lace, which had evidently become detached from the little animal's leg during its struggles. The lady at once identified the color and the texture of the hairs, and this was confirmed by the other sitter, himself a naturalist, who had frequently seen and handled the animal during its earth life. The 5 hairs were carefully collected, placed in tissue paper, and then shut up in a light, tight and damp-proof box. They were shown to several scientific and other investigators in London, but after a few days they commenced to dwindle in size, and finally disappeared entirely, owing, we assume, to the action of the actinic rays given off by the daylight and the gas light when they were being inspected by inquirers. It was those 5 little green hairs which settled the sneers of our would-be critics finally. Permission has been given occasionally by the entities to cut off with scissors a portion of a drapery so generally worn by them when making use of a materialized body, and if carefully preserved in a suitable box, it has been found possible to keep it for a short time, provided that the drapery was examined only in a non-actinic light. But in spite of the box being locked up in a safe, the material has always decreased in size, eventually disappearing entirely, and in consequence of this, I do not believe that it has ever been possible to make a scientific examination of it. Experiment number 10 place, my house in London. Sensitive B, female, aged about 49. The results of this experiment were, so far as I am personally concerned, the most wonderful, and at the same time the most convincing of all the tests which I have obtained. Experimenting with a picked set of sitters in my own room, with Sir William Crookes sensitive, the French dancing girl was standing fully materialized from head to foot, barely 6 feet away from me, 3 or 4 feet away from the sensitive, and directly opposite the gas bracket, the flame being turned up to its full height, the light being only slightly shaded with a piece of yellow paper, in order that the direct rays from the gas might be somewhat softened before falling upon her, as otherwise her features would soon begin to melt and to run, exactly in the way that soft wax will melt in the presence of heat, an extremely painful and unpleasant sight to witness, as I know by experience. She had been talking to us for 5 minutes, and showing us as usual her hands and arms, feet and legs, as she was evidently extremely proud of their beautiful modeling, when she turned to me and asked me to leave my seat and come and stand beside her. I did this, and she at once moved up quite close to me and rested her little head upon my right shoulder. I noticed that, although her features appeared to be smaller than those of a normal young woman of her age on earth, she was considerably taller than the sensitive, then a rather short and stout woman of nearly 50, and the mother of 2 grown-up daughters. Her complexion was beautifully fair, whilst that of the sensitive was very dark, the hair in each case following the general colouring. Her ears were unpierced, while the sensitive always wore earrings. These things satisfied me that the entity and the sensitive were two absolutely separate beings. But not content with this, I, for the first and only time during the 7 years which I devoted to this investigation, broke conditions. But the desire to settle the great problem once and for all so overmastered me that I very gently passed my right arm completely round the entity, and found that I was clasping the thin waist of a young girl, which felt both warm and firm to the touch through the white drapery with which it was covered, the measurement certainly not exceeding 15 to 16 inches, whereas the waist measurement of a sensitive that night was 24 inches. In this way, then, I received my final test, a test so absolutely convincing that I never asked for another one, and although I continued my investigations for several years longer, and with 5 other sensitives, no entity ever gave me such a test as this, nor did I consider it necessary to ask them for another one. But our red letter evening was not yet over by any means, for instead of displaying anger at my breaking conditions so deliberately, the entity merely smiled at the sitters as I held her firmly in my grasp for half a minute or more, and did not attempt to take her head from my shoulder until I had released her from my grasp. I then apologized to her for what I had done, and thanking her for giving me so wonderful a test, I returned to my seat. She then invited a lady to take her stand beside her, singling out one who up to that moment had always candidly admitted that she regarded this special sensitive as a fraud. The lady left her seat, and stood close to the entity, who at once rested her head upon the lady's shoulder, permitting her to place her arm round the girl's waist, and a very charming picture they made, the lady being dressed in a modern evening costume, the girlish form of the entity being clad in flowing robes of dazzling whiteness. They stood like this for nearly a minute, when we heard the entity ask the lady to turn her head round, and to look at the spot where the sensitive was sitting in deep trance, only about 4 feet away. She did this, and stated that she could see the sensitive distinctly, her head drooping upon her chest, her arms and hands hanging loosely at her sides, and her body clothed in black velvet, for she always insisted on wearing not only a black dress during our experiments with her, but black underclothing throughout, even giving to us her pocket handkerchief just before she passed into trance, so that no one could ever accuse her of masquerading as a materialized entity clad in white robes. Sir William Crookes carried out a series of experiments with this sensitive, Flory Cook, before her marriage to Mr. Corner, and she lived in the house of Sir William and Lady Crookes, in London, for some years, I believe. Needless to say, the experiments which he conducted were always carried out under the very strictest test conditions which a man of such worldwide renown as a scientist could devise, and it was owing to the splendid training which she obtained under Sir William Crookes that she was able to produce, during my experiments with her, long after her marriage, such wonderful materializations in strong light, and after submitting willingly to a searching examination of her clothes and body by a qualified medical man. Instead of shrinking from tests, she was always glad to think that we were endeavoring to obtain them through her, and when we had succeeded, no one was more thoroughly gratified to hear of our good fortune than Mrs. Corner herself. All honor to her memory. During Sir William Crookes' experiments with her, an entity, calling herself Katie, permitted him not only to cut off portions of the white drapery in which she always appeared, and a long lock of hair from her head, but permitted him to hold her in his arms and to make a scientific examination of her materialized body. He writes in the public press, "Having seen so much of Katie lately when she has been illuminated by the electric light, I am able to add to the points of difference between her and the sensitive which I mentioned in a former article. I have the most absolute certainty that the sensitive and Katie are two separate individuals so far as their bodies are concerned. Katie's neck was bare last night, the skin was perfectly smooth both to touch and sight, whilst on the sensitive's neck is a large blister, which under similar circumstances is distinctly visible and rough to the touch. Katie's complexion is very fair, while that of the sensitive is very dark. Last night, with bare feet and not tiptoeing, Katie was 4.5 inches taller than the sensitive. The sensitive's hair is so dark a brown as almost to appear black. A lock of Katie's hair, which is now before me, and which she allowed me to cut from her luxurious dresses, having first traced it up to the scalp and satisfied myself that it actually grew there, is a rich golden auburn." In another published report he states that he timed Katie's pulse on one occasion. It beat steadily at 75, whilst on timing the sensitive's pulse he found that it was going at its usual rate of 90. He applied his ear to Katie's chest and could hear a heart beating steadily inside, and pulsating even more steadily than the sensitive's heart. Katie's lungs too he tested, and found them to be sounder than those of the sensitive, who at that time was under medical treatment for a severe cough. Katie, on one occasion, walked about the room fully materialized for nearly 2 hours, conversing familiarly with the sitters present. Asking him to come to her, she took Sir William Crookes' arm, and walked about the room with him arm in arm, the impression conveyed to his mind being that he was escorting a living woman instead of an entity from another sphere. So perfect was the materialization. He states that on the occasion on which the greatest test of all was given to him, Katie asked him to leave the other sitters and to come with her to the spot where the sensitive was lying in a state of deep trance. He found her crouching on the floor dressed in black velvet, as she had been when the experiment commenced, and to all appearance perfectly senseless. He looked round, and saw Katie standing close to the sensitive. She was robed, as always, in flowing white drapery. He then took hold of the sensitive's hands, and kneeling down, carefully examined Katie so as to satisfy himself that it was actually her, and was not a phantasm or an hallucination. Katie did not speak during the examination, but only moved her head and smiled. 3 separate times did he carefully and critically examine the sensitive crouching on the floor before him, to make certain that the hand which he held in his was that of a living woman, and 3 separate times did he examine Katie, with steadfast scrutiny, as he so well says, until he had no doubt whatever as to her objective reality, the reality of her presence beside him. At last the sensitive moved slightly, and Katie instantly motioned him to go away. He moved a short distance from the sensitive, and then ceased to see Katie, but he did not leave the spot until the sensitive woke up. Thus we see that Sir William Crookes handled both the entity and the sensitive simultaneously, 3 separate times. So careful was he as to little details that he actually arranged for a friend who could write shorthand to be close to him during this test, in order that he might take down word for word everything that he reported at the moment during the test. He not only photographed Katie and the sensitive together, but after asking permission, he clasped the materialized entity in his arms and found, as I did, that he was holding as solid a being as the sensitive herself. As president of the British Association, he boldly declared before all the world that, after more than a quarter of a century, there was no statement which he had made upon this subject that he wished to retract or to alter in the light of later experience. As president of the Royal Society, he stands today as one of the great leaders of the world of science, and this in spite of the persecution that he endured for years, on account of his candid declaration of the proved existence of these entities in materialized bodies, at the hands of men of whom it has been well said they were not worthy to untie his shoelaces. The high position to which he has attained is a sufficient guarantee of his clearness and accuracy as an observer, his wide experience as a scientific investigator, the soundness of his judgment, and above all, the probity of his character, which in a matter of this kind is of the very first importance. In the face of solid facts, such as I have recorded here, is it any wonder that I and those who assisted me in my investigations, supported as we are by the evidence of Sir William Crookes, Professor Alfred Russel Wallace, and other master scientists, should declare positively that we have both seen and handled entities from another sphere, who have taken upon themselves materialized bodies temporarily, seeing with their eyes, hearing with their ears, speaking and singing with their lips, just as you or I, or any other normal human being, can do. It would be rank cowardice on my part were I to keep silence any longer as to the results which I obtained during the 7 years which I devoted to a critical investigation of this, the most wonderful of all the phenomena offered for our investigation by these entities from another sphere, and I intend to keep silence no longer, come what may. I am fully aware of the consequences of making statements such as those recorded here, for scientific and lay critics alike poured whole volumes of abuse upon Sir William Crookes' head for daring to make public the results of his experiments in materializations, and I have not the slightest doubt but that the same narrow-minded, pettifogging, carping spirit will be found amongst those today who cannot believe the facts which I have related here, facts which are proven up to the hilt, facts which no amount of argument, no amount of quibbling or distortion can ever move a single hair's breadth. For scientists to scoff at the idea of entities from another sphere taking on temporary bodies, and working under certain clearly defined conditions, is merely to display childish and willful ignorance, and until they take the trouble to investigate these matters for themselves, and to listen to what the entities have to tell us concerning their life in the spheres in which they dwell, they are not entitled to pronounce an offhand judgment, still less an injurious judgment, on the labors of those who, perhaps with fewer qualifications, but certainly with an equal desire of getting at the truth, have cheerfully undertaken the cost and the labor of the investigation, which they themselves have willfully neglected. Hypnotism. The suggestion has frequently been made in the press and elsewhere, that we were all hypnotized during our experiments. The reply to this suggestion is, that collective hypnotism is proved conclusively to be impossible. By incessant practice on the same individuals only, I find that I can obtain control over, say, 3 to 5 out of 12 really good subjects. In our case, however, the 16 sitters were changed at practically every experiment, so that it would have been impossible to have induced the hypnotic condition in more than one or two simultaneously. Hypnotism in any shape or form should be strictly forbidden in connection with such delicate experiments as those under consideration, and to deliberately place a sensitive under hypnotic influence at the commencement of an experimental meeting, instead of permitting him to pass voluntarily into genuine trance, is simply courting disaster so far as results are concerned. This has been proved conclusively in France and Germany recently, where on passing a sensitive for materializations into the hypnotic sleep, the forms issuing from the sensitive in many instances so strongly resembled illustrations in current numbers of local newspapers, which had been seen by the operator or some of the experimenters, or both, and had deeply impressed themselves upon the brains and minds one of those present, that whilst more advanced investigators at once discerned the cause of the trouble, the vast majority, in a state of utter bewilderment through their inexperience, put the results down to fraud on the part of the entirely innocent sensitive one, just as occurs constantly in cases of prenatal influence. Chapter 4: Questions answered by various entities. Spheres. 69. Spiritualization of matter. 72. Spirit, soul, and body. 76. The change termed death. Minus 88. Animals. 95. Partial materializations. 99. Loosening the ties. 102. Fraudulent phenomena. 106. Spheres. Q. We often hear you use the word spheres. Can you give us any information concerning them, their number, for instance, where they are situated, and if you can pass from one to the other at will? A. Their exact number I cannot tell you, but I will endeavor to answer the other portions of your question to the best of my ability. We find it extremely difficult to explain matters of this kind to you, on account of the limitations of your languages on Earth, and are therefore forced to use terms and illustrations which will make our explanation simple, although perhaps not giving to you quite so full or so accurate a description as we should wish. Now, to deal with your question. It is sufficient for you as mortals to know of the seven spheres of active life which succeed your earth life. The earth, as you now know, is round, and you can therefore picture to yourselves these seven spheres as grouped round it in ever-widening circles. Do not smile at my reminding you that your earth is round, for you cannot have forgotten that in consequence of the absurd teaching in your sacred writings, one every Christian and Jew, including all the men of science, until about 500 years ago, was firmly convinced that the earth was flat, and all who taught that it was round were punished with death. The sphere or plane of dynamic energy nearest to earth, you can call the first sphere, and this is the one to which the majority of mortals are attracted when they pass out of their earth bodies, and commence their life of progress, or the reverse, in the spheres of active life. But those amongst you who have forever cast off the shackles of all the false creeds and dogmas of earth, you who are making good progress along the free and open road of spiritual knowledge, the enlightened ones, as we call you, should make it your endeavor to so live your lives here and now, that when you leave your earth body for the last time, one, you should at once pass through this first sphere without pause, should open your eyes in the second sphere, having left all undesirable earth conditions too behind you forever as you passed from earth. Let this, then, be your aim during the few years of life on this planet which still remain to you. 1. See spirit, soul, and body. 2. See letting loose the ties. There is with us a fixed and immutable law that we may all pass downwards, as you would say, to the sphere or spheres below the one in which we are living, and when we choose to do so, just as I have done tonight in coming to meet you here, but none can pass upwards, as you would say, to the sphere or spheres above them, until the appointed hour has arrived for each entity to do so. We often hear you quote the words of your poet, "There is no death." That is perfectly true so far as regards the views you hold concerning the change which takes place at the end of your earth life, and which you term death, a change, by the way, which is identical with the one which occurs at the commencement of your earth life, and which you term birth. But, although there is no death in the sense in which you employ that word, either in your sphere or in ours, something analogous to it occurs with each of us in our sphere when the appointed hour for our transition to a higher one arrives, for on opening our eyes, after passing through this change, we find ourselves in a far grander sphere than the one which we have left. No matter how beautiful, how perfect, that sphere may have appeared to us to be. And this will continue, we understand, throughout the ages, each entity progressing in its sphere until the period of training in that sphere is completed, when it at once passes to the next sphere above them, progressing ever upwards. We can always return to the spheres below us, as I have already said, but we can never pass to a sphere above us until our appointed hour arrives. You will find this well described in the book, Through the Mists, which one of us gave to you people of Earth through the brain and hand of Robert James Lees. 1.1 Published by William Ryder Son, Limited, Spiritualization of Matter. Q. Can you explain to us how the materialized bodies which are used during our experiments are formed? A.